All right. We are back. Elliot Lane and Javier Jase are back together. Javi, yes. I didn't see you at all last week. I haven't seen you on this show in like almost 2.5 weeks. I've missed you, you beautiful Argentinian action figure. What's up?
How you doing? I miss you too. Not much. I was in Puerto Rico last week doing some work and honestly had lost my voice after the conference.
Excuses.
You know, 4 days of constant conversations and networking. Well, we can't do that to your vocal cords. But I'm back. How are you feeling?
I'm great. You know, I was so energized at the event just watching you. It was like Javier's like a little ball of energy at these things. He like bounces from one stage to the other. And y'all, if you don't know what we're talking about, check out bzcannabis.com. We hosted the most dominant B2B event in the cannabis industry. However, we're only going to spend a few minutes talking about cannabis because we're going to focus on another emerging market today with guests that are leading the way, paving the way, that have such a really cool view of the psychedelics industry. So today we are visiting a psychedelic insider.
And we also did, right, the Psychedelics Conference on the 13th, Benzinga Psychedelics Capital Conference. I'm going to drop a link for people to check out some of our content from the conference after this show. For those who are interested in psychedelics,
we had Brock Pierce and Jeremy from remind me their investment firm. I forget they've deployed a lot
Mystic
of money.
Ventures. Mystic
Thank you.
Ventures.
Mystic Ventures. That was one of the most I'd say highest form of positive feedback I've ever received for a piece of content in my 5 years of putting events on.
Really,
they were really
to the guys.
Really well received. By the audience. So,
awesome.
You know, I guess, you know, people like to hear that there's some optimism from investors. You know, I think those investors are also, I would say they're diversified in emerging markets is how I would put it. But that said, it was a very, very great content all the way around. But Javier, without us going on another diatribe about our event, because Tony and I covered it last week, is there any thoughts for you, man, any themes coming out of our event 2 weeks ago that you want to get off your chest right now that you're excited about for the rest of 2023?
That's interesting. Yeah, I think, you know, there are a few of them, right? But, you know, I was pretty obsessed with this Twitter issue. The fact that Twitter showed up and did two separate panels or conversations at our conference speaking about cannabis in a public forum for the first time ever, it was an honor. And it also signals, right, a new era, not only for social media, but for cannabis companies in general, right? We need to start understanding that as markets consolidate and the number of consumers is more or less set, of course, people are still converting from the illicit market. There are new patients. But, you know, many companies are in need to increase cash flow to get to EBITDA positive, right? And in markets where the demand is already set, it's important to start focusing on advertising to drive new clients, to increase your market share, right? So I thought that was interesting, you know, as it relates to people understanding that they need to start allocating more money to Twitter, more money, why not to Benzinga, El Planteo, right? Of course. But, you know, it's, and this is not like self-serving, by the way, like this is something that I was thinking about, you know, a couple of days ago. I was chatting with our chief operating officer at Benzinga, and he was like, okay, what are some of the conclusions? And I was like, this one was interesting, right? Understanding how you continue to gain market share in a market that is already set. How do you get to cash flow positive? How do you attract investments in a tough environment?
Eliminate redundancies. Yeah, all of the above. Absolutely, man. I think, you know, if you want to be a real CPG industry, these are conversations that you have to have. We'll continue these conversations in Chicago in late September, September 27th and 28th at the Marriott Magnificent Mile. Best hotel name I've ever heard, but we will be there. A lot of, I think, innovation, a lot of progress discussions per our colleague Patrick that will happen in Chicago. How do we keep maturing? How do we keep taking the next step forward? And that will be the conversation there. And if you want to be involved in our psychedelics event, we will host one annually in Miami every spring. So make sure to submit bzpsychedelics.com if you want to see this past events, content, and gallery, or submit speaker forms for the next one. All that said, Javi, you get two minutes yeah. rapid fire, and then I'll add on where I want to add on to what's happening today, my friend.
So one, you know, interesting piece of news out of Maine, they are looking to allow cannabis advertising and deliveries to commercial locations. So, you know, they want to add buildings being used for commercial purposes, including short-term rentals. So if you're in Maine, maybe like you want to order cannabis to an Airbnb, you could potentially do this. And then, you know, they want to allow marijuana businesses to advertise under the same rules as alcohol and tobacco products or prescription drugs, right? They could include signs and logos promoting adult use cannabis on the exterior, for instance, of motor vehicles and stuff like that, always with the proper disclosures.
It sounds a bit like the rescheduling conversation. but I wonder if more states took up this conversation, could it pressure the federal government to move quicker? Albeit,
there's something we've seen is like states making decisions around cannabis applies zero pressure on the federal government.
It's so true. It's so true. I will say Delaware gave it a good shot. They were like, listen, we're going to do this, but we need your all support to make more money doing this. So please support us. And so far, I don't think they got a response, which, you know, Joe Biden, that's your home state, maybe support their tax dollars. But that said, a lot of states in the news, man. Minnesota, they voted this morning. I don't think we have the results yet on the House. Their state Senate votes on Friday for recreational marijuana. So that's exciting. North Carolina should know in the next month if they're going to have medical marijuana this year. There's still a good bit of movement. New Mexico. I don't know if you saw this, but per Vengst's job report, their job growth increased instead of decreased like every other state in the union. Very interesting how an unlimited license market is kind of bucking that trend and creating more opportunity there for people to enter the space as an employee and as a participant.
Indeed. I have three rapid fire ones. And
go for it.
I'm good. One is the recommendation for after the show. Go to Benzinga.com/cannabis and check out the latest article by Mr. Pablo Swanich, an exclusive for Benzinga, about the 420 Cannabis Summit in Congress. Hope for Safe Banking and the Future of Cannabis Legislation. That is what it's titled. We also have MMA legend Nick Diaz partnering up with cannabis technology device company Hitoki to launch a laser bong. Yes, that is correct. A laser bong. And Richard Branson, the billionaire, beefing with Singapore over giving a guy the death penalty for a kilogram of weed.
And that's absolutely insane. I covered this yesterday on Cannabis Daily. Do you know? I mean, I know you know, but y'all, I had to look it up because I guess I'm dumb. It's fine. I'll admit it. I had to look up how much really is 1 kilogram in pounds. I was like, I want to know the exact weight, the exact reason this guy is being sentenced to death. 2.3 pounds of cannabis this guy was sentenced to death for. So you know what? Good for Branson. Good for him for speaking out against it, as we all should, because that is that's terrible.
AT is here in the chat. He's our conversion man. 2.3 pounds, says Mr.
Oh, yeah. Listen, AT is way smarter than me. It's why he helps us do this. Awesome. Javi, anything else before we jump to people who are way cooler than us, my friend?
Nope. Let's do it. Ready. Who's our first guest?
We're going to move first to the CEO of NASDAQ-listed MindMed, MNMD. Super excited to welcome Rob Barrow to the show. Let's bring him on over. Mr. Barrow, welcome in. Welcome in, sir. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thrilled to have you. Now, we were talking before the show. Are you calling in from New York or from Madison, Wisconsin?
I am calling in from Madison, Wisconsin. We're a New York-based company, but we've got employees coast to coast and in Switzerland. And we've really built up the organization through the pandemic and been able to bring in, I think, the smartest people we possibly could have by the flexibility to bring in, you know, coast-to-coast kind of organization.
Absolutely. Now, Rob, you are, one of the more well-known psychedelic brands in the U.S. and probably globally. Tell us a little bit more about what we should know about the company.
Yeah, so MindMed was founded in 2019, and there was certainly a huge emergence of research around the psychedelic drug class. I came into the organization at the beginning of 2021 as the head of R&D and then took over as a CEO and in June of 2021, And really, since that time, we've really rebuilt the organization and taken it to a place where we've brought in incredible leadership at the board level and our management team throughout our R&D and development teams. We think we have a we have a laser focus on our development programs. We're developing the psychedelic drug class, but we actually, I think one of the unique aspects, because we've taken a very pharmaceutical expertise and approach in our development programs, we're really going to get more out of the mechanism of action of these drugs. Everyone hears psychedelics and you think of a particular use case, a sort of high hallucinogenic dosing, but we're exploring a number of different avenues and think that there's an opportunity much broader in the drug class that we can ultimately capitalize and bring to patients who desperately need the treatments.
I'm going to let Javi ask the next question, but I do want to say, the head of R&D, I mean, I'm just going to say it, that a biotech is specifically a specifically a psychedelics company. I feel like you are the CEO. That is the entire purpose of the company outside of fundraising. It was a natural step, and I think, but Javi, go ahead, man.
Oh, man, I'm thinking, there's a through line in this episode, right? We're talking with MindMed now, and we're talking with Beyond Star later about Ibogaine. You know, most of the companies in the psychedelic space are focusing mostly on psilocybin and ketamine, and to a certain extent, maybe MDMA. But you know, one of the news items that really caught my eye also, because last week was Bicycle Day, is, you know, MindMed is looking into LSD for major depressive disorder. Can you tell us a little bit about that? You know, what's going on with your clinical trials, what you're expecting to accomplish here, how it works?
So, yeah, it's really early on in MindMed's formation, we entered into a broad research collaboration with Dr. Matthias Liechti out of University Hospital Basel, you know, the birthplace of Bicycle Day itself as well. And so they've been doing research on this drug class for the better part of two decades. If anyone who's watched the Netflix series, How to Change Your Mind, or read the book, Dr. Liechti's staff is really highlighted in the episode on LSD there. They have an enormous body of historical research and a number of ongoing studies with LSD and MDMA and a number of other molecules in the drug class. That collaboration has just yielded enormous insights into modern research and higher quality research. A lot of the legacy data for LSD, for instance, comes from the 1950s and 60s. And we look at those data as a great historical backdrop. Hundreds of patients, 20 plus studies where we're seeing effects in anxiety and depression. But really what we need is high quality modern evidence. We look at the collaboration with UHB and the recent depression data as very much a stepping stone. Now, FDA requires sponsored research, so pharmaceutical organizations to come in using regulatory endpoints, using a kind of the modern standards we require of drug development organizations. And that's exactly what we're doing today. We have two big studies that are going to read out by the end of this year. But when you go back in time too, I think it's really important to highlight LSD is the best studied molecule in the entire drug class. Modern research in the last few years has focused on psilocybin, as you mentioned. But when you go back in time, there's over 10,000 patients in clinical trials that have been studied with LSD. A fraction of that have been studied with psilocybin. And so when we look at what we know about the molecule, the enormous body of historical evidence that gives us optimism about the odds of success, about the promise that LSD and our proprietary form of LSD hold for the future of patients, we think it's really stands out. And hopefully this year with two key readouts puts LSD back at the front of that pack and it gets a kind of leadership stance that we all believe it deserves.
So my question is kind of twofold. It's a bit of a state of the industry question, so I don't mean to be boring, but I would like to understand a little bit about how MindMed is affected by major catalysts in the space, because it feels like this space needs catalysts. You know, this space, it needs a little push, and perhaps, you know, we talk about MAPS and their MDMA, progress there. Does that affect how regulators and you know, those looking at your data look at your LSD trials? Is there more optimism that's sparked among the investor base? I'm just curious, like, how does a catalyst like that on one compound affect you in your work on another?
Well, we certainly have seen really across the board an environment where as an industry, I think all of us are seeking to really reshape how we're taking care of patients with mental health disorders. This is really a transformative opportunity for those patients. And you know, it's against a backdrop where the mental health epidemic around the world, but particularly here in the U.S., has been, you know, going in the wrong direction for many years, more acutely, even worse over the last few years of the pandemic. And so, where we are today, the environment, the opportunity, the dynamics, where we're really rethinking how this can be done, how patients can be cared for, and giving mental health care treatments the value that they deserve. And certainly that backdrop, where there's a number of organizations having success and reaching catalysts, is very important, and something that the need is so massive too, that we very much have a view that there's a rising tide that lifts all ships kind of analogy, where, you know, seeing additional companies be successful, seeing various programs reach regulatory milestones, getting more evidence of effects of the drug class for instance, the serotonergic psychedelics like LSD and psilocybin, the MDMAs of the world, and even other molecules that have similar mechanisms of action, are all additive and supportive to the ultimate opportunity, which is to help an enormous body of patients and give providers the tools they need to actually improve outcomes in mental health care populations.
You know, looking at some other of your ongoing trials, you have another one on MDMA, right? I would love like some insight into that. And then like, why are you focusing on several different substances, right? You know, some might argue, okay, like taking a series of shots increases your chances or likeliness of success in one of them, right? And as many know, clinical trials and the pharma route is often binary in that sense. But others might argue, okay, like, you know, maybe, you know, taking on too much means you're not focused enough, right?
Certainly something that we've seen, and as the markets and the external macro environment has shifted over the last few years, we've continued to focus our programs. We really have two lead programs. One is our MM120 form of LSD. The other is, as you mentioned, MM402, which is a form of the R enantiomer of MDMA. So, you know, for anyone who is not deeply acquainted with sort of medicinal chemistry and pharmacology, these are sort of like left-handed and right-handed molecules that make up about 50% of racemic MDMA, which is what MAPS and other groups have been studying. What we found preclinically is that the R enantiomer seems to have some different properties, both in terms of how it acts at a cellular level, how it performs in preclinical studies, and ultimately think it opens the door to really broadening the opportunity, thinking of a new way of using the drug class. MDMA and some of these other molecules where we think of session-based delivery, again, is really one avenue where we can see an enormous benefit. We think it's a huge potential. That's why we're studying LSD and generalized anxiety disorder. But we also think, for instance, our MDMA program, we're developing it more like you think of a normal drug. The analogy we like to draw is how psychostimulants are used in ADHD is how we envision using RMDMA in autism spectrum disorder, where the active functional activity you see with RMDMA, we believe would be able to help patients who have a social communication deficit and live with autism. And so looking at multiple opportunities certainly is key. We think there's enormous value to be unlocked with an entire drug class. But we have continued to focus and streamline both our organization and the scope of our pipeline and what we're ultimately able to take on. And as we reach more milestones and have future successes, we certainly hope to continue that momentum and build and expand our opportunities into the future.
Do you expect any regulatory pushback and or lobbying issues? Not to compare to cannabis, but obviously like alcohols and pharma are big blockers of that. Is the pharmaceutical industry a partner in this venture to protect mental health, or is it a blocker?
Well, certainly we think of ourselves as part of the pharmaceutical industry. That's exactly what we're, you know, biotech companies and earlier stage drug development companies are there to really drive innovation. And we've seen a lot of, you know, small molecules in particular that are developed from smaller companies that have successes, get into later stage development, and either are able to take it all the way themselves and market the products or find partners in the pharmaceutical industry and in bigger pharma companies who ultimately can help get these treatments to the patients who ultimately need them. That's obviously the goal at the end of the day. So when we look at the landscape and the backdrop, both from pharma, from providers, from patients, from regulators, I can't speak for any one of them themselves, but I certainly think as we view the landscape, it's really attractive and one where there's a big pull across the board. There's a huge interest. There's a recognition of the transformative potential of this drug class. And as one of the organizations, really the only organization in later stage development with LSD, for instance, we think with data, there's going to be an even bigger recognition, a bigger pull to try to bring these products closer to commercialization and to patients.
I want to close it up with a question that seems like a good segue for our next guest, which focuses on ibogaine and ketamine. And it's, you know, one of the compounds you're looking into is like non-hallucinogenic ibogaine congener substance. What are you looking into in this specific case? And why do you go for this non-hallucinogenic route? Like, you know, that seems unusual for a psychedelics company.
Yeah, so at the core, and as I think we've built the organization, we're a drug development company, and we have a deep expertise. We've brought in some really talented drug developers, our clinical development and regulatory strategy, who've gotten CNS mental health products approved in the past. And so we think broadly about the central nervous system and brain health disorders as including both things that we think is mental health, but also things such as substance use disorders and withdrawal from substance use disorders. I think you're referring to the molecule MM110 or 18MC, mm-hmm. which we're developing and completed a phase 1 study. And after some negotiations with FDA, are now exploring additional preclinical work before we consider taking it into a phase 2 program. But the attractiveness of that molecule, we see with ibogaine, for instance, there are some potential risks. Like with any drug, there's potential risks. But certainly as we try to develop second and third generation molecules and overcome some of those potential liabilities and generate molecules that have less of a risk and perhaps the same or better efficacy profile, that's what we think of in an enhanced therapeutic index. And that's exactly what we were seeing preclinically with the MM110 molecule. Similar potency to ibogaine in treating or in preclinical models of things like substance use disorders and opioid withdrawal, but a better cardiovascular safety profile for the proarrhythmic risk that we see with ibogaine. It was not hallucinogenic, which obviously opens up easier adoption, broader utilization. And at the end of the day, again, helping patients is what we're all about here. So the ability to have a full arsenal available to providers, whether it be hallucinogenic molecules that drive rapid and sustained benefit, or drugs that just behave more like drugs that are based on a similar sort of structural backbone. We're open to that whole spectrum of opportunities and saw enormous promise in each of those avenues.
Fantastic. Robert Barrow is CEO of MindMed, NASDAQ traded MNMD. Robert, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope to see you again soon.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Robert. All right. That was very insightful. Really appreciate Robert joining us, man. Any themes you're seeing right now that could take us into our next interview? Or do you want to get right to it?
No, man. Let's keep it clipping because I want to hear like the other side of this.
The other side.
You and ibogaine. Yeah, the
other All right.
Side.
Well, you can get us started because I'm curious to see what you mean there. All right, Javi, who do we have next, my friend?
Next up is Marco Alcorta, CEO of Bienstar Wellness Group and Clinica Veneva. Let's bring him on.
Welcome,
hello,
Marco.
Guys. Hi, Elliot. Hi, Javier. How are you?
We're doing great. Well, man. Doing good. So, Marco, I am a newbie to Bienstar. I'd love to hear more about you. What is Bienstar Wellness for those of us who need to know?
Yes, Bienstar Wellness is a network of clinics. We're focused on Latin America. I really believe that in the psychedelic space, Latin America have a very important place because that's where all the molecules most of the molecules that everybody's talking about have been from here. Now we have a culture who really have respect and use those molecules for many centuries. So we want to bring all this movement that's happening in the US and Canada to Latin America for the patients of Latin America, because we really have to a problem of mental health. Mental health is not just a problem in the north. It's been a big problem in countries like Argentina, Javier knows that, Uruguay, Brazil, Mexico. So we really want to bring those solutions to Latin American patients. So that's what's about Veneva, no? We are doing our best to help people from Latin America to have psychedelic treatments.
I don't want to do a versus, right? There's always two sides to the story, but you were just hearing how Robert was talking about, you know, mitigating some of the risks of ibogaine. And I remember last year I heard you speak in Panama about some of this, right? So how do you feel about this? Is, you know, what are some of the risks of ibogaine, and how are you dealing with them, right? And to what extent is this real? You know, there was this interesting article in Newsweek about this as well. So share some of your thoughts.
I know exactly what is information that Robert have and why he say that about ibogaine. Because really, ibogaine have been used with not all good protocols behind them. Okay, so yes, of course, ibogaine, if you don't use the right protocols, if you don't use ibogaine with patients that are not clean, totally clean, if you don't, I don't know, if you don't have the right hospital environment to protect, yes, it maybe can cause you problems. Okay, that's true. But we have been working, we have more than 100 patients already treated with ibogaine in our research. So what's really happening is if you really treat well the patient, if you really make all the screening that you need to make, and you really have all the team ready to work if something won't happen, you don't have any problems. Our rate of problems is zero with all those treatments. So yes, it's true that ibogaine is risky, but if you do the right protocols, those risks will disappear.
So, you know, I mean, color me a little bit of a newbie here, Marco. Would not all psychedelic compounds be risky if used inappropriately?
Yes, some more than others. And maybe ibogaine is one of the most riskiest because ibogaine, they use a lot in recovery addiction. So when you're using cocaine, you're a cocaine user like that, you have your TT interval in your heart that will be more like less. So the ibogaine, it will be this interval TT of your heart be bigger, more bigger, so you can have a problem. Okay, so that's the problem with ibogaine. But yes, all of them have some risk. But yes, true that I know psilocybin, let's say, have a low risk, and maybe MDMA have a little more risk, and et cetera, et cetera. So, because now you put everything together, psychedelics, but psychedelics is one, is not just one drug, you know, you have different drugs for different persons, for different treatments. So each one have their risk, you know, and I don't like I like the word psychedelics, but I don't like to put all the psychedelics in the same place because they're not the same.
You know, we do know that for instance, as we mentioned earlier, Mind Medicine is working on an ibogaine similar compound for the US, right? But I do know that it's not available in the US legally right now. However, I have heard that there are places in Mexico where you can get this kind of treatment, right? So, you know, the US is clearly facing an unprecedented opioid epidemic. People face addiction of many other kinds, you know, alcohol, cigarettes, cocaine, whatever it is, even Coca-Cola, whatever an addiction may be and affect a person differently. But, you know, I would ask, like, oh, why would I go to Brazil? It's far, like Mexico is right next door.
The big difference we have with Mexico that we do that in hospitals, in clinical hospitals. And we do the importation of the ibogaine through our Food and Drugs Administration, through our FDA of Brazil, through Anvisa. So Brazil have the control, the sanitary authority in Brazil have the control of the ibogaine. And so we do that in a compliance way, in a legal way, a totally legal way. Okay. In Mexico, how they import ibogaine, we never know exactly how they import ibogaine. No? So it always have some let's say, space of illegality in the chain of the treatment in Mexico. That's not happening in Brazil. And that's a big difference. You're going to do it in a hospital. So you really have a problem that can happen, like Robert said, ibogaine, in Brazil will be safe.
So, and I guess just looking at the global opportunity, following up on that question, what is the global opportunity right now for ibogaine, you know, and where your company can go and expand to, or I guess really what are your plans for that?
First of all, our opportunity is the market of Latin America. Okay, we're receiving a lot of patients of US, Canada, and Europe, even the Middle East. But with all the Latin American, we have the enough patients to treat, let's say like that, okay? Because we are the only today's company, psychedelic company, making treatment of psychedelics in Latin America. Because in Brazil, we have a lot of problems with cocaine, not so with heroin, but with cocaine and crack, we have a lot of problems. So we are treating them. But yes, of course, our opportunity is that we are maybe the only clinic in the world with ibogaine doing that in the hospital environment. So that's our big opportunity. If you really want to make a totally compliance treatment of ibogaine to treat your addiction, today your best option is Bienstar. And that's our opportunity right now.
You know, one follow-up to that as well. Sorry, Javi. Then you can go for a couple. Yeah, there's some companies in Canada that have applied to produce these Schedule 1 is a term we use in the US, but these very highly illegal drugs, I imagine for safe consumption spaces. Is that something you would consider in order to reach these types of people that need your therapeutics and your medicine and you know, get them through the door?
I know that they're looking for, have a company listed with ibogaine in their names, you know, so they are looking for. They don't have right now, but they are looking for that. I don't know when they will really be ready to do the treatments or not. Okay, but we are always open to. We are very open source, like that. We are open to collaborate, to have partnerships, to really work together. We think that, like I say, always the I right now I'm in São Paulo. Okay, São Paulo is a city with 70 million persons. So. Just with the public of São Paulo, I don't have enough beds for everyone. No? So what we're really looking is that it's really put ibogaine in the really scenario to help addictions, to help people find their recovery, and really put accessibility in our front page. No? Let's help people. Let's make things work, because we really have a big, big problem of addiction in the world, not just drugs. I don't say drugs, but alcohol is one, the biggest one. So let's really put that together. Let's, because what we saw with ibogaine, and that for me is really important, that it really works. Really. Oh, I have saw the patients. It's not that someone had told me, no. I really have saw the patients coming in and getting out. So I know that a lot of people can be helped with this treatment, this kind of treatment. So let's put this accessibility of this treatment for everyone. That's my idea.
You know, when you look at 12-step programs, the success rate is pretty low, under 20%. When you look at rehab clinics, they're also pretty low. Their whole business is for you to come back or stay for a long time, right? Ibogaine, on the other hand, has 80 to 90% effectiveness. But you do need to be clean. You said that, right? Like 30 days before the treatment, you need to be clean, right? And to a certain extent, that concerns me. It's tough, right? That the whole issue with addiction is like, I can't stay clean, right? That is a challenge in and of itself, right? So how do you get to that point where you access this therapy that then, you know, works, but there's a huge challenge before getting to that therapy, right? How does that work? Is there, I don't know, any help, yes, any mechanisms?
First of all, you make the screening of see if you really can use ibogaine, because some people cannot have the treatment. So that's the first phase, the screening. But after is the preparation phase, no? And then the preparation is those 30 days that it must be clean. You're going to really help the patients to be clean, no? Of course, that there's something in psychedelics that I think is very important, that to the psychedelics really works in our patients. The patient really need to want to be cured, to be safe. So in those 30 days, we're going to help you to be clean. And we're going to help you to any problem that you can have for be cleaning, for abstinence. We're going to help you with psychiatrists, psychologic, now supporting you maybe with another kind of drugs to help you to really be safe between the 30 days. Maybe with morphine, now that don't interrupt us, our treatment. People with cocaine, I can give you benzodiazepines and other kind of drugs to help you to really survive those, like say like that, those 30 days. But when the patients were really conscious that they can really be safe with our treatments, they make the effort. No? Our rate of success, the people that start, is very, very high. Because when they really make the first step and they feel comfortable and they feel supported by our doctors, they really can do it. I know that from someone who has addiction, talking, okay, let the drug 30 days. No, and when for an addict, the drugs is the center of his life. No,
yeah.
So what am I gonna do if I don't use drugs? No? That's a question maybe sometimes that the patient have after the treatment. Say, okay, now I don't want to use drugs. What am I gonna do? No, but so you are even the preparation and integration after the treatment. We're helping the patients really find new centers of his life and not be always thinking in drugs.
That's incredible. I have literally never thought of that. I mean, I don't think we've ever had somebody mention that. Just the importance of time when it comes to what these people are trying to get over and where that time goes post-treatment. An important integration step. I'm going to start asking literally every company because of you, Marco. I'm not going to give away your secrets, man, but well done to you and team. That's awesome.
But that's very important. We need to understand the people who have addiction. When you're using a drug every day, all your life is around the use of this drug. When you take out that, it's like, whoa, what am I going to do now? So it's very important to support people in this life changing that is get out of the drugs. So for us, it's very important.
Super interesting. You know, to close it up, I want to understand one more thing. Sorry, Elliot, I know we're over time, but like just one quick one. It's like, okay, you have like 30-day preparation and, you know, you got great success rates. What is the treatment itself like, right? You take Ibogaine, where are you tripping? Who's with you?
You take Ibogaine in a hospital, you get the Ibogaine at 8:30 a.m., you take the Ibogaine. So you have the first 1 hour, that is, now you have a little nausea, it's like a confusing time. After the hour of treatment, you have, your mind is very accelerated. Now you have, thinking a lot of things, image that coming, etc. That period take a lot of time. Now you're going to be in this period until 4 p.m. And after 4, 5 p.m., you start to integrate those images of your childhood, of your life that you have saw during the trip to your life, real life, no? To present life, let's say like that. And you're still there in this integration process, let's say like that, until the night. And the other day, if everything's okay, you are get out of the hospital and you go to the hotel just near the hospital. You're going to be survived by our doctors, but you're going to be in a comfortable bed in a hotel waiting your flight back home.
Wonderful. Marco Lagorda, CEO of BNStar Wellness, really, really appreciate your time. You shed a lot of light on this. I think a good subject for us to really have a baseline education on, but I'd really love to have you back on and see how you grow, see how you expand, see the effect you're making. But we appreciate you taking the time to be here with us.
Thank you, Elliot. Thank you, Javier. It's an honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We'll see you next time. Wonderful. My 7-month-old, if you can hear in the background, absolutely loves Ibogaine.
I got to meet her in Miami. I'm so happy.
She has
the cutest pictures.
I love her. We'll show a collage to you guys sometime. Not that anybody's interested except for Javi and I. But all that said, awesome psychedelics insider episode here. Ventured away from our normal guests, but we have plenty more on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Javi, we are talking with the two head honchos of Green Check Verified. Very important company when it comes to capital flow, when it comes to banking, when it comes to financial services. Kevin Hart and Brett Puffenbarger are going to be with us to chat about all of that. Super excited. If you're going to be in MJ Unpacked in New York City this week, I will be there tomorrow. Look me up. Let's hang out. I'm excited to watch some content and support cannabis events. Very important to professionalize and standardize this industry. Outside of that, Javier, last thoughts to you, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Benzinga.com/cannabis. Get your daily dose of cannabis news. Go read Maureen, Yelena, Nina, Nico, Joanna, Vuk. Go read Lara for psychedelics. It's just Benzinga.com/cannabis. Go bookmark it. Subscribe to your newsletter. Follow us on social media.
You won't. Y'all, the newsletter looks good. It's gotten a makeover over the past few months. If you have not subscribed to our Benzinga Cannabis Daily Newsletter, you should do it, because I got to tell you, and I say this biasedly, but I do try and say this unbiasedly, it is definitely the best newsletter in the cannabis industry, without a doubt. So all that said, Javi, appreciate you. Everybody watching, appreciate you. Tommy, Sam, Tammy, Franca, everybody in the chat, thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening to this after the fact on Apple, Spotify, all your favorite platforms, appreciate you. Share with your friends, and we will see you guys again next time. Have a good one. I didn't know how to take that one off. Peace.